Festival, taking place January 12th through the 30th. All screenings are at the Witzel Auditorium in the Portland Art Museum, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland.
Quicksilver Messenger Service with Pride of Man. Very appropriate song for this subject this morning. And my guest, Robert Hunsaker, who just wrote a piece called 2 Minutes to Doomsday on Counterpunch. And I've had him on several times before. I really love his spirit of taking on the biggest, scariest, and most complex subjects on a regular basis from global climate catastrophe to Fukushima to the end-stage neoliberal capitalism, all the way from Los Angeles, California. Robert Hunsker, good morning.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Got a cup of tea in my bloodstream, and I'm raring to go here. And
All right.
And of course, that Quicksilver song. Are you familiar with that song, Pride of Man?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Wonderful.
It's
it gets your blood flowing. You're right.
Yeah. The apocalyptic imagery right before us as your article as you said just came out yesterday on Counterpunch, 2 minutes to Doomsday. Of course, you've been dealing with the subject of Doomsday on a regular basis. Hard to say exactly how far we have to go. Of course, the idea of the doomsday clock comes from the bulletin of the atomic scientists. How far back does that go? Do you know? Was that like the 40s or 50s?
Yeah. 40s. Yeah. When we started messing around with atoms and atomic power, shortly thereafter, a group of scientists said, "Hey, wait a minute. We've got to put out some kind of an alert here that we're dealing with fire." And so they started the Doomsday Clock. And in fact, just a short history on that. Post-World War II, it was set at 17 minutes to midnight. And of course, when it strikes midnight, that's the fatal final hour of Holocaust. Then in 1998, it moved again into single digits, from 17 minutes to single digits, when India and Pakistan, when they were involved in nuclear weapon testing, both of them. And then when Trump was elected, the scientists decided they would move it to 2.5 minutes to 12 o'clock midnight, principally because as commander-in-chief, he was provocative, destabilizing. All of his verbiage was the type of thing that certainly could upset the world community. And only recently, they've moved it to 2 minutes. Now, this is the closest they've ever been to the dreaded midnight hour. The reason for this is that global risk, and they're talking about, of course, nuclear risk, have compounded considerably. For example, U.S.-Russian relations that really features more conflict than cooperation these days. There's a continuous NATO exercises on the East European border threatening Russia. They're also upgrading their nuclear arsenals, both countries. They're also both foregoing any arms control negotiations. So you've got that. You also have tensions increasing over the South China Sea. You also have both Pakistan and India building larger nuclear arsenals than they've ever had before. And you also have, and you can see now why they've gone to 2 minutes, in the Mideast, we're driving a stake into that, into the heart of that Iranian nuclear deal, which could really upset an apple cart there. So in addition to that, there's also a major, major risk of a fundamental breakdown in the world order, simply because the U.S. has torpedoed trustworthiness amongst countries. You know, it's a good example of that is the undermining of the Paris Accord by the Trump administration. Not only did they undermine it, they belittled it as well. And so their deceptive and unreliable rhetoric tosses the world into a tizzy. So for all these reasons, we've gone to 2 minutes. Now, I, in my article, maybe I should go back to you, see if you have any further questions right now, but I also talked about neoliberalism, this whole neoliberal type of capitalism that we've been under for heavy duty now for 35, ever since Reagan and Thatcher, by the way. But that also, I think, is endangering the planet severely. And I think if the scientists were to take that into consideration, we'd be at 1 minute to midnight.
Yeah, I wanted to, so I don't know, I had this impression that they had sort of broadened their scope beyond the nuclear on the clock. Is that true or not?
No.
Okay.
No, they're still just on the nuclear path. And my article makes it seem that way because then I incorporated the whole neoliberal brand of capitalism that is built up to a crescendo as a bigger risk, if not an equal risk, to the nuclear power. That's my word, my thoughts.
And of course, that's driving, climate change has been going on since the Industrial Revolution, and well, obviously climate change has been going on forever, but human-induced climate change has been going on, accelerated since the Industrial Revolution. Seems like there's growing evidence that it's actually started even well before, with large-scale clearing of forests and agriculture and large-scale changes in the geophysical environment. But obviously with the rise of fossil fuel-based economy, it's been pouring massive amounts of carbon dioxide. And the changing of the regulatory framework under neoliberalism and accelerated capitalism and the introduction of new capitalist economies, growing capitalist economies all over the globe, especially China, sort of forsaking their communist roots and going whole gung-ho on the development path and toward competing on the world stage with the big capitalist economies has really kicked global climate change. And that's obviously another result of what you call what is called neoliberalism. So let me get back to what you're talking about in this piece, 2 Minutes to Doomsday, talking with Robert Hunziker here on KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio. I guess I didn't even introduce myself. I'm the host, Paul Roland. I guess I take it for granted everybody knows who I am by now. And this is a call-in show, 503-231-8187, to talk about this and other subjects. There seems to be something bleeding in from your phone line. I'm not sure what that's all about.
From mine?
Yeah. I don't know. There seems to be a little bit of a some sort of audio glitch there, but anyway, you're very hearable.
Okay, good.
So let's get back to this piece, which it talks about not only the, as you laid out, the nuclear threats all over, and also the breakdown of biosphere, but talk more about what's going on.
Yeah, well, one of the things then that I segue into in that article of mine, beyond just the doomsday clock, is I think it's an equal pressure point, and maybe more so than the nuclear pressure point, is in fact neoliberal form of capitalism. And what I state is that rampant neoliberal capitalism endangers both the social contract as well as ecological responsibility. And what's it all about? Well, it's about, privatization of public assets. Let's just take one quick example of that. Of course, we already know they're digging into privatization of public assets in the educational field. We know that. But also, how about drilling in national parks? Speaking of privatization of public assets, there are 500 active oil and gas wells in 12 of our national parks right now. And they're looking to open up another 30 national parks to oil and gas drilling. In fact, Trump issued an executive order in March, and he directed his federal agencies to make it much easier. He told his Interior Secretary, in fact, to abolish any regulations that will counteract any kind of oil and gas drilling they want to do on federal properties. Give me a break here. I mean, there are 300 veteran Park Service officers who signed a letter of protest to this. This is just gross. The other things you've got, with this neoliberal type of capitalism we've got, is it's really based upon rugged individualism. It's based upon free market reign supreme. These things have footprints that go way back into our history. Frederick Jackson Turner, the famous historian, wrote the Frontier Thesis. And what he said about that whole thing was that America, our psyche, was created by a constant moving frontier, starting with Pennsylvania, Ohio Valley, Midwest, over the Rockies, on it goes. And that formed our character of our country. Well, right to bear arms and carry open arms, that type of rugged individualism. So now we're down to the point where, you know, Milton Friedman is the one who really coined the term neoliberalism in 1951 at University of Chicago. And now that has really taken over the entire world economy. And it's all about limited government and free market reigns supreme. Ayn Rand, her type of stuff. And what's happened now is that the neoliberalism now has morphed into something even worse. What it's morphed into is a super libertarian movement. And libertarians, their motto is abolition of the welfare state. That's their motto. And that's really their battle cry. And so as a result of that, you want limited government. What do? You get rid of things like the EPA. And that's what Pruitt's been doing and Trump with executive orders. They are dismantling. All of the services that we've got that protect our ecosystem, protect our environment.
Well, of course, that's a long subject about how much the regulatory framework has actually protected the environment. But of course, the completely unregulated is certainly way worse than the very flimsy regulatory framework, which had massive loopholes, basically allowed the exploitation of the environment. But I don't know if you heard Trump's speech last night. I didn't listen to it, but I heard snippets, and he did brag that he has done away with we have eliminated more regulations in my first term than any other president in U.S. history. So of course, it's obvious what's happening. You know, there was this sort of a pendulum swing back and forth between, you know, the sort of the welfare state capitalism and, you know, liberal capitalism or neoliberal capitalism or libertarian capitalism. But this seems like the capitalist system is basically at a stage where it seems like in order to just continue at all, it needs to do away completely with the welfare state form, which basically was a way of, you know, keeping workers relatively contented, sort of buying them in to the whole growth model of the capitalist economy, basically allowing corporations to pollute, but not too badly. But of course, that's breaking down because the accumulative impact of all the pollution is leading to biosphere scale perturbations like climate change. But anyway, so it seems like all bets are off now. The capitalist system is basically surviving on financialization and deregulation of, you know, doing away with whatever environmental health and safety standards were in place, so it can continue to grow, because otherwise it risks basically collapsing in on itself, seems to me.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right, and well put. And it is a financialization. That's what we've got nowadays. Everything is a commodity these days. Everything has a price. In a pluralistic society, that probably doesn't work very well. But what I've said is that this hardcore neoliberalism that we've got now is literally taking our ecosystem to its knees. And you and I talked a few days ago, or last night rather, for a couple of minutes in anticipation of this show. And I talked to you about the metaphor I like to use about our ecosystem and our biosphere. Of course, the biosphere is really, to define that for everybody, the biosphere is everything from the bottom of the ocean to the top of the top highest mountain. That's the biosphere. And then you have ecosystems within that. But what's happening is that this hardcore neoliberalism is taking it to its knees. And the thing is, people don't see where it's happening. They just don't see it. And it's kind of like the metaphor you and I talked about last night, the airplane you're riding in from New York to Paris. And you don't notice it when several rivets that hold the body of the airplane together pop off. You don't notice that. And what we've got right now is we have those rivets popping off in our ecosystem that people don't notice. Let me give you a couple of examples. But you do notice that final rivet when it goes, don't you? Now, for example, These are things that are all related to too much CO2 in the atmosphere, too much global warming. One is that the Atlantic Ocean conveyor belt called the thermohaline, that's starting to slow, and that's all important for all of Europe. It's interesting if you think about it. Paris is farther north latitude than is Minneapolis. Yet Paris has a much milder climate than does Minneapolis, and it's because of the Atlantic Ocean conveyor belt that brings up tropical warm waters in along the coastline of Europe. The other thing that people don't see, but it's happening, and it's a real threat, that we've lost 40% of the planet. This is because of global warming, because the oceans are absorbing 90% of global warming, by the way. We've lost 40% of plankton production in the ocean over the last 50 years. That's a major source of oxygen for all of us. Every other breath you take is because of plankton producing oxygen. A third thing that we don't see, but we're more really attuned to this, really, than anywhere else in the world, is in our own Gulf of Mexico. The dead zone there has hit an all-time record high of 8,800 square miles. That's the dead zone down the Gulf of Mexico. The oxygen throughout that dead zone is so weak, the fish die.
So that's a result of both heating up the ocean and the massive pollution coming mostly from the Mississippi River, right?
Yep, you got it. Exactly. Agricultural, all that kind of stuff. Now, here's something else. The ocean kelp forests. The kelp forests in the ocean are similar to the terrestrial rainforest, right? They're decimated from Tasmania to California. 95% of the kelp under the ocean forests in Tasmania are gone. All along the California coast, they're gone. Again, it's because of the warming of the ocean. Greenland. It had its total surface melt for the first time in scientific history a couple years ago. Jason Box is the famous geologist from the United States who now is a geologist for the country of Denmark, who studies that very carefully, and he's alarmed because of that. Something else that people don't see, but it's happening, is this massive Arctic meltdown. You know, I cringed when I heard Trump say that the ice is at record high levels in the two poles. I just cringe. It's such a massive lie. I could kick the guy if I were standing next to him. The massive Arctic meltdown we've had of that ice is exposing these methane hydrates, and that can cause runaway global warming, which will burn out all of our agriculture. We're at risk of that, and there's some serious problems there that I'll talk about in a minute. But one other thing I want to mention, another rivet that we don't see, but the Antarctica ice sheets have started an irreversible collapse. We've had three massive ice sheet collapses in a decade. That's unheard of. Unheard of. So these are all rivets that are coming apart that we don't see in our everyday life. Final rivet, it'll be too late when that final rivet hits.
Indeed. And I really like that. It frightens me, but that metaphor I find extremely useful. I've been, as I said to you in our conversation, I've been struggling for metaphors because the mind balks at trying to put some kind of fit it into our mental framework, fit it into our outlook on the world, because as you say, it's very difficult to see, and the instruments that we have through science are mostly, in the hands of experts, people who've studied, who've been trained to study this, and in fact, to see the big picture is extremely difficult, but because it requires a multidisciplinary effort, which is not really being done. There's so much specialization, as another guest I've had a lot, Paul Beckwith, bemoans repeatedly. Even other scientists who should be tuned in and very concerned about what's going on in the Arctic and elsewhere aren't, because they're focused on their little piece of the research pie. Anyway, we've got a caller who's been waiting for a couple minutes, and I'd like to invite other callers at 503-231-8188. 877 to join my conversation today with journalist Robert Hunsaker. And we have Karen. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Thank you, Paul. I just wanted to mention a factor that your guest didn't mention, but I'm sure is aware of, and that's the military-industrial complex as an aspect of the economy that provides this giant engine of production of destructive weapons, of course. And now I have heard that the United States' largest export is arms, and that the military is the biggest source of carbon pollution, and that the capitalist drive for profit, for continually increasing profit, means that they must continually spread weapons to countries, which helps destabilize these countries. And the factors that Robert has been discussing of destabilizing food supplies, of increasing acidity in the oceans, dead zones, and that also affects, of course, food supplies for many countries, but land-based decrease in food supplies and then ocean decrease, these factors will only drive people in desperation to use weapons. So I just wanted to mention that factor. Maybe I didn't understand enough of the systemic view, but I think that's a big piece of this system, just seems to me. So thank you so much. I'll take any response you might have off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think that should be your next guest. that was brilliant. You know, I have so much respect for the Portland area because of these conversations we have occasionally, because you have so many smart people there that are thinkers, that really think about things in life. And Paul, one thing I want to fall back on here just for a moment, you were talking about scientists and how they're so specialized, individualized. I know there are scientists who just study pteropods, for example, you know, and the impact that the climate's had on them, this acidification, for example. The pteropods are really minute snails that are free-floating. They're part of the base of the food chain in the ocean. And the acidification is deteriorating their shell such they can't even reproduce anymore. Anyway, but I want to say something kind of, if you look at the overall picture, there are a couple scientists I want to mention here. One is James Lovelock, and he's a very famous British scientist. Today he's 98 years old, still practicing science, and in the UK. And he originated the theory of Gaia. And that is that the Earth compensates and self-corrects in its climate. So you don't need to worry people about human impact, so forth and so on. He expounded that theory for decades. In 2006, he said, "I'm rejecting my own theory." And he made the statement that civilization is in grave danger. Now that's James Lovelock, 98 years old today. The other scientist I want to mention, and this is another overview of science rather than an individual viewpoint on one piece of it, Wally Brecker. Wally Brecker's 86. He's still practicing scientist with the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia, University of Columbia, in their Department of Earth Sciences. He's the grandfather of climate change. He's the person of global warming, rather. He's the person that coined the term global warming. And he has stated that at this point forward, and he said this a couple years ago, there's probably not much we can do now. He said geoengineering is not going to work. There's not much we can do. We've sealed our fate with already way too much carbon in the atmosphere. And now we're going to have to learn how to combat that and live with it. It's going to be an unsettled world. So here's two people that are really at the very top of the pyramid when it comes to scientists in the world, and they're talking about grave concern for civilization. Meanwhile, we have the world's worst possible administration under those conditions running our government right now, and I really want to appeal to people to think about that and do whatever you can to get these people out of there. We just can't have it. It's too dangerous for people like this. They've really lifted the danger zone. I think the doomsday clock is, to me, it's a minute to midnight because of the Trump administration and all of the rascals that he has brought into the administration. It's just horrendous.
Well, let's go to our next caller. Is Tracy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you. I'd just like to weigh in on a big contributing factor that we all can do to help our planet and ourselves, and that is that if we stop consuming animal products, we will be doing more than all the benefits of insulating our home or driving electric vehicles combined. It's the agriculture industry and eating meat that is destroying our planet more so than anything. And it's not just the CO2, it's the nitrous oxide and methane that are far more powerful than the CO2 that's harming our environment. If you don't believe me, look into it. Please look into it. It'll benefit yourself, the animals, and our planet. Thank you very much. I'll keep listening.
All right.
Great. Yeah. Well, I can't disagree with that. And that's just one more thing. And if we could all be vegan, then I think we'd be way ahead of the game. And that's healthy, too, by the way. And, you know, that leads me to something else I just thought of, Paul, if you don't mind if I
go ahead
a little bit. And that is, you know, I wrote an article about our toxicity, the toxic planet that we've got. And frankly, chemical emissions are the largest footprint on the planet. And it's the least understood and the least regulated chemical emissions. World Wildlife Fund Global Research said that only 14% of the chemicals, and there are 2,000 new chemicals per year, by the way, only 14% of those have the minimum amount of data available to make a basic safety assessment. And the UN and the chief, Ian Boyd, the chief scientist in the UK, have warned regulators that regulators worldwide are falsely assuming that it's safe to use pesticides on a massive industrial scale. Now, what's that led to? Well, here's what I see happening, and it's not really talked about or written about enough, and that's this. We're swimming in chemicals in this planet, swimming in pesticides. 250 billion tons of chemicals are emitted every year. That's a toxic avalanche on all over the world. Here's what's interesting. If you go back to the start of the last century, it was infectious diseases that was the biggest killer. Tuberculosis, pneumonia, diarrhea, that thing, stuff like that, were the leading causes of death. By the start of this 21st century, the one we're in now, chronic illnesses are the leading cause of death. Heart disease, stroke, cancer. And then you have problems, all kinds of other problems that have neurological problems. The RAND Corporation did a study. This is astounding. If you're standing, please sit down. 60% of Americans, that's 150 million, have a chronic condition. 150 million Americans. 30 million Americans live day in, day out with five chronic conditions. What's causing this? What is causing this? Why is it all of a sudden you have 150 million Americans who have a chronic condition of some kind? I believe we're poisoning ourselves. I know it's a pretty rash statement and bold statement to make, but I think we're poisoning ourselves because we see these pesticides that are sprayed all over the place. We find them. We find them. In baby food, we find mercury in polar bears. And Mount Everest, the snow in Mount Everest is so polluted it doesn't meet EPA drinking water standards. It has arsenic and cadmium in it. And that was taken every 1,000 feet up the side of Mount Everest by a biologist out of the University of New Hampshire. I can't think of her name right now. So we're poisoning the whole planet. We find furniture chemicals that they used for make certain kinds of furniture in squid, deep water squid. The whole planet.
Well, now that we've got people frightened, they probably won't leave their house from listening to the radio.
Rachel Carson's landmark book. Silent Spring's coming to happen.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, all this stuff is so true, and of course, there's the argument that hammering people over the head with this horrible information is just further paralyzes people.
Yeah.
And there's a point to that. And you know, we were talking last night, and I was saying that I have a sort of distrust for this theory of if we just give enough information to people, they will be able to make better decisions. And that was kind of in the context of we're talking about postmodernism, which is something I've been talking about on this program, which is I think probably too complex to handle in an hour show, certainly for me anyway. But the whole problem of the way that people are so awash in too much information to begin with, conflicting mm-hmm. information second, and third, mm-hmm. you've got, you know, quote, what Trump calls fake news, but which what he calls fake news actually are people who are actually, I think, still trying to give a rational account of the way things are, and it's against his interests. But the, you know, there is all this real fake news going on out there, which is, if you go to a lot of websites, climate denialists, this, that, and the other thing, and so it's just really hard, unless you've got, what kind of a mental framework does it take to be able to navigate these extremely confusing waters? And I kind of threw postmodernism into the mix, and in a lot of ways unjustly. But you know, when it's read superficially, there is this extreme relativism that it tends to, and sort of a distrust of sort of objective truth, which does add to in a lot of ways the undermining of real some sort of coherent foundation or framework within which context within which to put all this difficult and challenging information that we have. But with that caveat put out there, I do think it is still important to put it out and talk about it. The real task is what do we do? How do we come together? How do we create spaces for conversation? How do we create movements for change? And that's the task. And with that, let's go to our next caller. Joseph has been waiting patiently. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi there. This is a prime example of why I support KBOO. I just wanted to say I only caught the speaker's first name. I think it's Robert.
Yep.
And I just want to say I wish there was a way to get a man like this or a woman of equal stature to speak to our Congress, to speak before a gathering of people who are actually causing these things to or not doing anything to try to stop them. And he makes a great point about the chemical load in our bodies. I just heard the other day on one of your shows that every human on the planet has Teflon. The chemical makes Teflon, and so do most, if not many, of the animals. So I just want to say thank you, and good luck on what you're trying to spread.
All right. And his full name is Robert Hunsaker, and we're talking specifically about an article that came out yesterday on Counterpunch called 2 Minutes to Doomsday. He has another recent article, Global Warming Stirs the Methane Monster. He has an article that he's referring to now about cancer and those kind of conditions. I mean, the chronic conditions. And another very interesting piece, which I don't think we'll really get to, but will aliens save humanity? This very strange connection between UFO sightings and nuclear sites that has come out now because of some declassified information. But that's a very fascinating piece. And we've got another caller waiting. Johnny, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. I like to be a little bit more like positive and say that I look at humanity and Earth from an archaeological standpoint. We're digging up bones of humans that's as old as 200,000 years old, And I think maybe 50 or 100,000 years from now, they're going to dig our bones up, assuming we survive. You know, I think the planet will be here. I think the planet will heal itself. I think evolution will continue. And I think we need to put a lot of the very true things Robert bring up in context as to how this affects our age and how it affects our children and our grandchildren. And I think if we look at it from the aspect of our children and our grandchildren, I would 100% understand his absolute fear. But on the other hand, we can all agree the planet will be here.
Right, but you said two things. You said we'll be here, and you said the planet will be here. I agree.
I said we may be here.
Oh, okay.
I put a may, because, I mean, there's always been mass extinctions on the planet. And I think it's arrogant for any human being, despite our intelligence, to think that we can't be a part of that extinction process. But I also think that the planet will be here.
Well, clearly,
as George Carlin used to like to say, when you talk about global warming, he says the planet's not worried; it'll be here. We might not, but the planet will be. You can count on it. You're right.
Well, when we look up our archaeological digs, yeah, and we look at these ancient civilizations, we could clearly see that the planet was a different place than 100, 200 years ago, 50, 60,000 years ago. So we can understand that the planet has always dealt with massive upheavals. Now,
Wait a second. I got to challenge that, because how specifically was it different 50, 60,000 years ago? Because I think what Robert and I assert is that actually the changes that we are making now, especially in the past 50 years, certainly in the past 200 years, in an accelerating way, are actually unprecedented in the planet's history. It's a very significant thing to look at.
Well, yeah, I want to agree with you mainly. I want to say in the last 100 years, we've really been having an effect on the planet's biosphere. And I really believe that as our biosphere becomes more unstable, the instability of that biosphere will actually cause a revolution amongst humanity at some point, because all the billions of dollars in the world isn't going to freshen the air or increase the oxygen levels in the planet. But as far as the planet's concerned, I believe humanity will somehow survive and get a wake-up call. And as far as the nuclear clock is concerned, I don't know. I mean, our country with our jets, we're knocking out Russian jets over Syria, and we were primarily behind Syria. Why weren't we any closer to the doomsday clock than we are now under the different administration? I mean,
well, let's give Robert a chance to respond. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, one thing I will say is that I know a world famous naturalist who kind of agrees with him, and that's David Attenborough, the world famous naturalist out of the British UK, who's done so many specials about nature on the BBC, and he's certainly drilled down into the problems we've got today in our blue planet and exposed those. But he comes to the final conclusion: he believes that human ingenuity will win out over time. So you've got someone like David Attenborough agreeing with you're saying. I think that's kind of what you're saying, really. Am I right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Look,
yeah.
When we're dealing with the Valley of Death, it does change a person's attitude, especially when we're worried about our children and our grandchildren. Because
in the scheme of things,
2,000-3,000 years from now, I mean, a lot of these things the planet will recycle. You know, I do believe that if we just leave well enough alone and let the planet regenerate naturally. So, I mean, in a larger spectrum, from an archaeological standpoint, I don't think it's that bad.
Okay, well, thank you for... Well, just thank you for calling.
Yeah.
We got some other callers queued up here. I need to let me just take a break here, Robert, and let you finish your response to Johnny's comments.
Well,
there.
All I want to say is I think that I respectfully disagree with his statement from the standpoint that you talk about people like Paul Beckwith, who you've interviewed, and I know Paul, and some of these other scientists that I know of, who study these individual pieces and parts of what's happening to our Earth system. And across the board, what they're telling us is that what's happening is 10 times faster than anything we've ever seen before. 10 times faster. This stuff is happening on an exponential basis. Now, when we talk exponential, the linear is one thing, and that's okay. That's the Earth for the last millions of billions of years, the linear changes. Exponential means that on a linear basis, I can walk from here to a water cooler 20 feet away and take 20 steps. On an exponential basis, if I take 20 steps exponentially, I will travel around the planet Earth once. There actually be about 30 steps exponentially. So we have now an exponential event taking place on so many different layers of the Earth system, especially in the ocean. Alex Rogers, who's the out of Cambridge, who's the lead person for the State of the Oceans organization, is quick to tell us that what's happening in the oceans is happening 10 times faster than anything they've ever measured throughout paleoclimatic history. So we are at a danger flashing point, and I've written this many times before, that we should be out clanging the bells and blowing the whistles and really coming to our senses. Let me tell you something here. Some things that have been measured recently by scientists in Alaska, permafrost. This is just alarming and really didn't make the press and it would never make the press. In Alaska, the permafrost is emitting as much CO2 carbon right now in 2 years as the U.S. commercial sources emit per year total. So that's like doubling your flavor of CO2 going into the atmosphere because of permafrost melting. We also have evidence now that the tropical rainforest are reversing from being a carbon sink to a CO2 emitter. You don't want to hear that. And the biggest problem we've got is positive climate feedbacks, and that's a negative, not a positive. It's influencing global warming itself. In other words, our planet now is on autopilot. Hands-free, it's emitting one molecule of CO2 via every two molecules of CO2 emitted because of human activity. In other words, the planet's cranking it out itself. That's alarming. And
those rivets coming off real quick. I just want to let people know that coming up this morning on KABU at 9, Sojourner Truth Radio pays tribute to the late great investigative reporter Robert Perry, who passed away this weekend. At 10, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. 10:15, flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Letters in Politics looks at the fascist takeover of Vienna, Black Lives Matter Today, and the nature of the presidency. KBOO Radio, which you are listening to as you're listening to my voice, keeps you informed, and you can get involved. You can become both a member and a volunteer. You can, there's many, many ways you can get involved. Perhaps the simplest is to go to kboo.fm and click on donate to become a member if you're not already, and support this all-important continuing community resource and beyond, since we are on the web, kboo.fm. And my name's Paul Roland. I am on the Wednesday Talk Radio, obviously every Wednesday morning, 8 to 9 a.m. The other days of the week, Monday through Friday, you can get other hosts to talk about other important subjects of local, regional, and national and international importance. And my guest, as I said, is Robert Hunsaker, who writes regularly for Counterpunch and other outlets. And we got another caller. Let's go right to Barth, who's been waiting very patiently. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Thank you. Welcome to your guest. He's been a good resource for a broader spectrum information. your analogy about the rivets coming out of the airplane, you don't have to wait till the last rivet for the wing to fall off. You just have to get enough to not spread the load. All of these things are interdependent, and that's what you were talking about in your latest remarks there, tipping points, that if you have a certain amount of back-end pressure, then the system kind of accelerates itself. The ocean's crashing, so there's no plankton, so there's no fish, so we can't eat fish, so the pH level changes, so you get more water vapor coming off the ocean, so your storms are heavier. They're just click, 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 click.
Exactly.
These are the things I believe you've been trying to emphasize. And if the nut job in Washington keeps having his way, we're adding much more back pressure to the things that are making a negative outcome. We're taking off the restraints for general pollution regulations. We're taking off the constraints for fossil fuel exploitation and shipping. We're taking off the constraints for responsible behavior on all kinds of levels, and we're making that seem like a good thing to some people. It's not just a matter of, this is my country and I'll do what I want to. It's a matter of, if the country burns down around you, you're not going to have a lot of choices.
Yeah.
Those are my two cents. I mean,
all right.
I'll just let you go and I'll listen on the air. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, okay. Barth.
Yeah. The other thing, the thing that kind of goes through my mind when he was talking, because he made reference, to the current administration we've got. When you really stop to think about it, here we've got the leader of the free world, the president of this country, making criminal statements to the world community when he says things about, denies climate change and says that the poles have reached new record highs of ice and these type of things. That's listened to around the world by people. It influences people so much. It really is criminal. That he gets away with it. Absolutely criminal. And so I think that what people really need to focus on is do whatever it takes to get rid of this guy. I hope Mueller is successful in proving that they did money laundering, which I think the Trump organization did, by the way, on everything I've ever read, and I hope they can nail him for it. They need to go to jail.
Indeed. Of course, then we get Pence, unless somehow Pence is caught up in this, which probably not very likely will be. I think if he becomes too much of a liability to the people who basically cynically used Trump, I believe is what's going on. A combination of the right wing Christians and the fossil fuel establishment and elements of the financial establishment, basically, the reckless capitalists and the apocalyptic Christians. I believe that Pence is certainly waiting in the wings. And basically, I think Trump is basically served to do the dirty work that the establishment Republicans probably weren't able to do on their own. And he was also
exactly.
He was also electable because of this whole. The reaction against Obama, this whole, anti-establishment Tea Party fervor. There's a lot of reasons why the other candidates, the Republicans candidates put forward were less than desirable to the populace. So this wild card was the only thing, basically all they had against Clinton. And obviously Hillary Clinton's liabilities were such, and the whole gerrymandering and election rigging all of that put together resulted in Trump being elected. But he definitely was, he put himself forward because of his own ineptness, as his own indebtedness to the various mobs of the world. And this is his way of basically saving himself. But it was also convenient for certain elements of the global elites to put him there. Anyway, all that said, it's way beyond just Trump, obviously, because once he's done his one-man wrecking crew, the person who's going to pick up the pieces will be Pence, and he will just carry it forward to perhaps even more apocalyptic scenarios, given his propensities. Anyway, that's just my quick two cents on what's going on. Again, I didn't listen to the State of the Union speech. Looks like we've got one more caller. John, go ahead. You're on the air. Hello, John?
Comment that I was going to bring up. I don't work anymore, but when I was working, I had these hellacious arguments with people who are revelationists. How do you deal with these Bible Belt people? And two, I've heard other scientists say that with less than 10 years, maybe the maximum 15 years, it's too late, and might as well just kiss it goodbye, because if we don't do anything right now, and some scientists say it's really too late, period. So my whole thing is, how you deal with revelationists, and how much time actually we have left? Thank you.
There you go, Robert. Okay. A couple softballs for you.
What a way to end.
There are some people out there, like Guy McPherson, for example, and also Guy McPherson is a biologist scientist from
University from Arizona State, I think it is,
and he indeed is. He's on a lecture tour worldwide where he actually preaches that very fact that it's too late. He's identified 30 different tipping points that the ecosystem has crossed that are irreversible, that endanger all civilization, in his view. There's also the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, which is a really interesting group out of the UK. Peter Wadhams from Cambridge is one of the leading scientists in that. He's the worldwide expert by far on Arctic ice. I think he's traveled under the ice at least a dozen times in nuclear submarines. He's been on top of the ice, had trips up there 50 times over the years. And in fact, he wrote a book a year ago, Farewell to Ice. That's pretty interesting. And his theory, the end conclusion, is that with the loss of the ice, you're eventually going to have all blue water in the summertime, and we're very close to that now. Problem with that is that you've got these methane hydrates, which are lattices of ice that trap methane molecules that have been under the ice for millennia, and a lot of it, and that is going to get melted, because when you get just a blue background instead of the greatest reflector on the planet has always been the North Pole or the Arctic region. It reflects 90% of the sunlight and heat back into outer space. When you lose that, the water, the dark background, absorbs all that heat. And by doing that, you're going to melt off these methane hydrates, which could lead to massive amounts of methane spikes. We've already seen some of those. Even during the winter, we've seen spikes of up to 2,500 ppb, which is huge, into the atmosphere. So something's happening. There's some rumbling going on there. Now, what that could lead to is runaway global warming. And you get runaway global warming, and that then will seal the deal on this. We've got 10 to 15 years for civilization to live, because it'll burn off all the agriculture in the world. The temperatures will rise possibly 8, 9, 10 degrees average year worldwide, and the whole equatorial region and all those tropical countries will just sizzle. And that is the risk we've got. And that's, of course, what happened to Venus. Venus, our sister planet, 95% carbon dioxide is their atmosphere. The temperatures run 5,000.
Okay, Robert, on that dire, most dire of notes, leaving the revelation aside, we're going to have to leave it there. I refer you to kbo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio to get some more information and my other programs. I've been speaking with Robert Hunsaker. You can see his latest article, 2 Minutes to Doomsday, on Counterpunch. Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, bet. You bet. Nice talking with you.
Okay. And that's Paul Rowland for, this is Paul Rowland for Wednesday Talk Radio. Bye-bye.
Oregon's child incarceration rate is one of the worst in the country. A new investigative report by Disability Rights Oregon found that kids in custody at NorCor, a jail in the Dalles, receive harsh discipline, including solitary confinement, for infractions such as asking what time it is or for just looking around. These kids are as young as 12 years old. Other states are reducing child incarceration. Why not Oregon? Join us on Prison Pipeline, February 5th at 6:30 p.m.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor U.S.-Saudi Coalition, Bring Peace or War, on Saturday, February 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Performance Hall in Portland. This event will focus on Saudi wars, aggressions, and its relations with the West. Speakers include Aisha Juman, Mohammed Al-Namir, Catherine Shakhtam, and more. Again, that's U.S.-Saudi Coalition, Bringing Peace or War, on Saturday, February 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Lincoln Performance Hall, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.